around that just, they just retired him 5 years ago. He's been driving since 74.
Wow.
What chapter are we on?
37.
37.
Sorry about that. But we're going to go down memory lane. We're going to go back a little bit and catch some things up. Let's start with an opening prayer. Sam, could you lead us in prayer, please?
Dear Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for the warmer weather, the cool dip that we had. We thank you that we all be gathered together this morning to worship you. We thank you for this time here in Sunday school that we can have a more intimate discussion of your words, specifically Genesis. Be with Jim as he delivers a lesson. Be with us so we can be active participants. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Did everybody read chapter 37? Yeah, good. It'll make it quicker here. Let's go back to chapter 10. And let's talk about the Table of Nations for a minute, because the rest of the book of Genesis actually is about Joseph and Egypt. And you ever think how Egypt was formed? How it started? I mean, we all went through the Tower of Babel and that, and Ham, and that's what is kind of sticks in your throat a little bit, something about Egypt. But anyway, it says, and these are the generations of the sons of Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now, according to the Table of Nations, 10:6, it says, and the sons of Ham were Cush, Seba, Havila, Sabtal, Ramah, Sabtida, and Dedan. And verse 8 it says, and Cush begat Nimrod. Now Nimrod, kind of keep that in your mind for a minute. Verse 9, chapter 10, tell you something about Nimrod. And Nimrod was a mighty hunter before the Lord. It is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. Now, what do you think that means, that he was mighty before the Lord? You know, and I think this is important that we understand this, because of what Egypt is and how God says, stay away, stay away, stay away. We're gonna try to tie this with evil works and people that are doing evil things. But anyway, this before the Lord, there are some other verses. Psalms 34:16. Go to that, because this will kind of tell you. Psalms 34:16. And this is going to tell you what that means about this guy Nimrod. I should have just read it. I'm sorry. It says, the face of the Lord is against them that do evil. Do not cut off the remembrance of them from the earth. And that face of the Lord, that's kind of what Nimrod was. They wasn't bragging about him. Oh, this guy's great. He's a great hunter. He thought he was better than God. He was mighty before the Lord. So he put himself before God. And then, you know, this Tower of Babel. That's what he done. He does this Tower of Babel. And in verse 3 of chapter 11, and they said one another, Nimrod here, let us. And that's where people get in trouble. All peoples anywhere get into trouble. Unlike Isaiah 1:18, where it says, come now, let us reason together, saith the Lord. See, now, if the Lord says, come now, let us reason together, that's what we're doing here this morning. That's different than this Nimrod guy. You know, he said, let us. You know, he thought he was mighty. He thought he was going to do something. And so when they use their reasoning power, they usually get in trouble, leaving the Lord out. And that's what they were doing. And in 11 and 4 it says, let us make a name for ourselves. Psalms 127, let's turn there and then we're going to get into Psalms 127. And I think these are important that we understand where this come from and where it's going. Because as we go through Genesis, you know, we start to put this stuff together. 127:1 says, except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Except the Lord keep the city, the watchman waketh in vain. And that's something Nimrod didn't stand. And Ham and all that generation, they did not understand that. So this Egypt, place Egypt. Now, Psalms 105, this to me is very important. Let's see, 105:23. Israel also came into Egypt, and Jacob sojourned in the land of Ham. So Egypt, God calls it the land of Ham. Now that's not a compliment at all. Egypt, and also 78:51, it kind of says the same thing in Psalms. So Egypt was started from bad seed. You know, and we all knew that, and I'm not telling you nothing new this morning, except I like to bring that stuff in our forethoughts and our memories as we start going this thing about Egypt and what it was. So a quarter of Genesis is dedicated to Joseph. So there must be something pretty vital and pretty important about Joseph. There's 13 chapters devoted to Joseph. That's a lot of chapters. A quarter of the whole book of Genesis, and Genesis was the beginning, but a quarter of that book, this book, was dedicated. And something else I found about Joseph, and you won't find about anybody else in the Bible, maybe Daniel and Jesus Christ. There was no bad things ever said about Joseph. But if you go through almost anybody else, you're going to find where they fell short or they're just outright wicked. I mean, your combination. You won't find anything bad things about Joseph. So we should really pay attention to this story about who this man was. And he was 17 years old. You know, a lot of times we're still sowing our Wheaties at 17 years old. We have trouble at that age because, you know, we're full of energy and, you know, we haven't got God on our mind necessarily. We got other things, ourselves on our mind. Here's a 17-year-old kid, and that's what most of us in here would call him. He's a kid. So there was no bad thing said about him. And there's a lot of providence in this story. Anybody can tell me what providence is? How do you explain providence? Donner?
God watching out or directing things.
Is what?
God watching out for someone or directing things.
Yeah, I think God takes ordinary events and arranges them to his purpose. I mean, that's what's going on here. And Joseph is very important to the Hebrew people and the Israelite nation as this comes forward. So that's another reason we need to keep in mind. Now, if you go back to Genesis 3:15, what do you remember about Genesis 3:15? And I think this is important. I know this is kind of boring to you because we've already gone through it, but it's just vital that we keep these stories, the importance of these stories and what they mean. And when I say story, I don't mean fairy tales. They're true events. What about that seed? The Israelites. Shem. You know, we start with Shem and Ham, Shem and Japheth. Shem was the seed, and up through Judah. And the next chapter of Judah, you wonder what in the world. He wanted to burn his daughter-in-law to the stake. I mean, I'm not going to get on with somebody else to tell the story. But so there was Shem, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Judah, the birth of the Israelites. The Hebrew people become the sacred lineage of which the promised seed will come. That's what 3:15. Remember that seed? Do we need to read it?
Like the curse put on the womb.
Yeah. I ought to be able to quote it, but I'm not smart enough to remember all these things. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed, and that shall bruise thy head, and thou shalt bruise thy head. So this seed is the whole course of what's going on here. And this story here is all part of this. So Joseph was a prophet. And it doesn't say that he was a prophet. But go to chapter 40, verse 8. And I'm not going to read a lot about it because we're going to study about it later. But I'm trying to put this together so when we start putting all these pieces together, they're just going to fit. And they said to him, "We have a dream, and we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it." And Joseph said unto them, "Do not interpretations belong to the God? They belong to God. Tell me then, I pray you." So he interprets those dreams, and they come to pass. Now, isn't that what a prophet is? Yeah, that's what a prophet is. So, and his biography. Oh, go ahead, Darlene.
No, I just have a question. I've got a note in my Bible that Nimrod also built a city of Nineveh. Is the Tower of Babel, is that where Nineveh ended? I don't know. I think it was.
But you know, all that geography and dates is so hard to put them together, and it's all basically in kind of one area here. It sounds like it's all over the world, but at this point, it's not. It's all pretty condensed right here. Then Joseph's biography is one of overcoming the trials, I mean real trials, of life. And he didn't falter. I mean, he just didn't falter. Okay, now let's chapter 37. I know it took a little time there, but I think that stuff's important that we don't forget these things, that this story, these things mean something. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah, and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. Let's skip it a little bit. Let's go to verse 3, and then we're going to go back to verse 2. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. Now what do you think about that when you read that? That Jacob loved Joseph more than his brothers. Or all the rest of his children, brothers and sisters. What's the first thing you think of?
It's not good, but I can't comment given that I only had one child. But I've always wondered, for parents who have more than one child, do they really love one more than the other? I don't know.
Yes.
Do they?
I'm the oldest, and I was the favorite.
Okay.
That's not what your mom told me.
But hey, guys, being the only is better because we don't have any rules.
But he loved Joseph more because Joseph was from the wife he loved.
Rachel. That's one of the reasons.
And
yeah, that's right.
And he loved Benjamin as well as he loved Joseph.
Yeah, we'll find out later. That's right.
Yeah.
Perry?
Just for what it's worth, I'm the seventh son, so I didn't know anything different.
You didn't know anything different? You were the same as all seven?
No, so, I was number seven.
So you think they were all treated the
same? So I just grew up, you know, behind all the taking the good, the bad, and all of it together. Life was good.
Well, it seems to me that Jacob didn't make any he made it apparent that Joseph was his favorite making that call.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He kind of was stirring the pot with the other brothers and sisters.
Now, when you read that, the first thing I thought of, and I've always kind of thought that way, that Joseph would just be a rotten, spoiled brat. I mean, he isn't that the way it would work in our eyes?
He was a tattletale.
Was he?
Well, we found out about it. So get
okay. I mean, that's right. So keep that in mind.
He'd always nudge it. Y'all are going to bow down to me. I had the dream.
I know. And when you read that stuff, and then when you read that part of it, and then when you read the rest of it, that he was just such a good kid. I want to bring something else to your attention here in a minute, Johnny.
The coat of many colors is more important than most people think, because the way the coat was made was showing a state of power others didn't receive any such.
Well, the Arabs today still do that. You know, they think that's very important. Now, anyway, we're not going to have time. We're going to get going. Now, because he was the son of his old age. Now, when you think about, there's a reason that's in there. When you think of that, I looked at that and I thought, well, you know, it sounded to me like Joseph was just taking care of Jacob more than the rest of them. You know, as the last one, the youngest one, he probably looked after his father a whole lot more than the evil brothers. And we're going to get into that evil brother stuff. But so he had a reason to be favored. Wouldn't you favor the one that was taking care of you the most? And as we get older, you know, I got Brian and Chris. If Brian is going to doubt over us and really take care of Don and I, am I going to favor him over Chris? Duh. Just nature does that. So keep that in mind. But there's more to this than that. Now, I want to go... Oh, I thought somebody had something. Let's see. Joseph's life doesn't reflect a spoiled person. Now, turn to Ephesians 5:11. Because, I think it's important that we understand something about Joseph. Because to me, he can't be a spoiled little rotten brat and do all the good things that happen to him. I mean, it doesn't fit. The picture doesn't fit. What fits Joseph is 5:11. See, we run into that same problem today. We have the very same exact problem. 5:11, let me see here. It says, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. Now, when we reprove, say, our children, are we tattletales? Do we dislike them? And Johnny knows, as elders, we really don't have the option as elders to say, well, let's keep peace. Let's be peaceable in Hebrew, like be peaceable among all men. Because what's peace? Is let it go. I don't want to get into your business, darling. So I'm not going to tell you things that you need to be told. So when you look at, did you have something, Gary? I'm sorry.
I was thinking, it was most of this, at least the way that I read it, was a matter of tact. And when you're young and you're a real, obviously good person like Joseph was, and honest and truthful, sometimes you don't go over in your head like you do when you're 40 and beyond and say, well, I could say just this. That's the blatant truth right there. It's in your face. Or I could say, look, there are ways to handle things. And especially when you talk to your brothers, don't rub it in their face. Just explain to them that this is an opportunity that you see that God has given you.
And I'll tell you what, I lean more toward that with Joseph than I do that he just couldn't wait to go out and rub it in their face, as you say. It kind of sounds like it, but when you read about Joseph, the rest wouldn't fit that conclusion, Sam.
And I was being funny when I called him a tattletale. No, I think when you read...
I know, no, you're right.
When you read all that Moses wrote about him, the highlights, he showed integrity throughout his entire life. I think this is just trying to show the first case of that integrity, that he's being honest with his father about the doings of his brothers, trying to keep things straight.
Yeah, in Hebrews, I think chapter 10, verse 12, I'm just going off the top of my head, it says, no chastising or rebuking seems to be joyous at the moment. None of us like that. I guarantee there's not one person in here that enjoys that. Some people won't tolerate it. There are Christians that you just can't say anything to. They'll come unglued. Now, is that what's supposed to happen?
No.
That's what happens with the brothers. And that happens a lot more often than not. You know, chastening seems to be joyous at the moment. That's, you know, God put that in there. Donner?
Well, I think Jacob already knew what the character of his other sons were from and all of that.
Oh, yeah, so we're going to...
This may have not been something new that Joseph is telling him anyway.
No, we're going to find out more about that. But he wasn't self-righteous. He wasn't mean-spirited. It's not in the Bible. So when we read about Joseph, let's take this for what it is. Joseph was a good person. And that's why I said when I started that he was favored or loved more than his brothers. His brothers were evil, and it's going to tell us that. Joseph wasn't. I mean, what's a parent going to do to somebody that... And the reason I say that he was probably more attentive, it wasn't just because he was young. It was because he was a righteous, godly person. That is the right thing to do. And I think he was doing what the right thing. Johnny?
But now Israel did rebuke him for saying that. And the way I read it, he made Delilah, you mean you... myself and your mother is going to bow down to you.
Yeah.
I mean, he done what a typical father probably would do. He rebuked him for saying it. You know?
Yeah, for that he did.
Yeah.
And I think it's because he didn't understand at all at the time. He didn't know. So anyway, Joseph's brother, anyway, verse 2, it says, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah and his father's wife. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now, that's what I'm talking about, the difference between his brothers. They were doing evil. Joseph wasn't. He just wasn't. Anyway, verse 3. Any comments on that? My rambling? But I wanted to kind of put this together because it's really a great story. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. My comment is that would be a natural response. You know, it just would be. And Joseph dreamed a dream and he told it his brethren, and they hated him the more. I don't know, maybe hate someone more than hate. Hate, I thought, was as far as you could go, but it says they hated him more. And I think this hate, the hated more, you can hate, dislike and hate somebody and not want to kill it. And I think that's what the hated more is going to mean to us here, because that's what they're going to do. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. Now, and I like what Joseph said there. I pray thee, you listen to me. He wasn't shoving it down their throat. You know, he's basically saying, this is from God. I pray thee that you listen to me. He was concerned about his brothers. Not that they would be his servants. I don't think that was how Joseph was approaching them at all. He was approaching them from the standpoint that I had this dream, it's from God, and this is what's going to be. I think he hoped they would quit doing their evil deeds, but of course they weren't. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood around me and made obedience to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? They didn't like that, did they? Does anybody in here like that? Boy, I tell you, talk about the hair standing up the back of your neck. You don't like that. And one of your brothers say, you're going to bow down to me. That don't cut no mustard. That just don't work. You got to be careful. And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. What's the difference there, his dreams and his words?
His interpretation of his dream.
Yeah, I think Darlene hit it right on the head. Or Johnny, I thought it was Darlene. It's how you say it. Maybe you, Gary. But anyway, but I think here, he said it as humbly as you could say it. But some people, I don't care what you do, because they were doing evil deeds, they weren't going to accept it. People that are doing evil, they're not going to accept God's word for the most part, at least that certain points of the life. I'm not saying that it never happened. You can go to Judah and we're going to find that out. And he dreamed yet another dream. And he told his brother and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obedience to me. And he told it to his father and to his brother, and his father rebuked him. That's what Johnny was talking about. And said unto him, what is the dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee? Now that does seem a little egotistical, don't it, that this would happen? But he started this with, I pray thee, y'all listen to me. And Jacob, of all people, to me, should have listened, should not have rebuked him. And why do I say that? What about Jacob?
Well, he should have understood, first of all, where it's coming from.
Yeah. Him, if anybody.
To me, it just seems like none of them could handle the truth.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't say anything bad or the way he presented it. It was just, they couldn't handle it.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, one difference I see here, at least I think, when you're in management and you want people to, you don't want them to work for you. They're not your slaves. You don't want them to work for you. You want them to work with you. You want synergy, but you got to recognize, or they have to recognize too, that you're the leader.
Here's the bottom line.
Yes, but if you got your thumb on them all the time, you're never going to get the best out of them. You're never going to get the attitude that, hey, if we see you start to fall, we're going to let you fall on your face. You want the people that are working with you and say, hey, if we see you fall, we're going to all gather around you and hold you up.
Yeah.
You know, and so,
right.
But because Joseph was so young, and I'm sure he was really excited, and his, you know, exuberance was even more of a thorn in the side of his brothers. But he could have said it a little differently. Instead of bowing, which means absolute submission most of the time, he could have said, you know what? I'm going to have a position and I'm going to rise up and I'm going to lead you all. You know. But he was too young for that. And I understand that.
Yeah,
I can see myself doing exactly what he did.
Yeah, youthful exuberance gets us in trouble. It always has. But Jacob had been knocked down a few pegs before.
Yep.
He should have understood this. He had dealings with God. For some reason, though, this rubbed him wrong. He didn't like it. So Jacob rebuked him, and that's what it says. Rebuked him. I mean, it's real plain.
And Jacob may have done that to reduce the level of hate of the brothers to Joseph.
But you can rebuke somebody and not be mean or loud or out of line. So I don't know what this rebuke was.
But if he didn't do it that way, the brothers wouldn't take it. Oh, Joseph's still faithful. Look, he's handing him with kid gloves, and he's, you know, letting him do it. He's just kind of, oh, little boy, calm down. No, he rebuked him, so the brothers could be anyway. So they would think, well, maybe Dad's at least dealing with him, you know, justly, even though it wasn't.
And his brother envied him, but his father observed, saying, and his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem, 50 miles away, so it's all right, basically the same area. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said, here am I. He was ready to go, wasn't he? Isaiah 6:8. What's Isaiah say? 6:8. Yeah, here I am, send me. I don't know if there's any correlation or not, but some people are just willing. And I don't think he was running to be a tattletale. I don't know. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren. So Jacob was concerned about the flocks or his sons?
Sons.
Yeah, I think he was concerned about both. He was concerned about sons. So he had love for his other sons. It wasn't just Joseph. And bringing word again, so he sent them out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. And Dothan was 50 miles from where they were. And Joseph went afar, his brethren, or after his brethren, and found them in Dothan. Now when they saw him afar off, his brothers, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. That simply means they plotted to kill him. Now, is that kind of evil? That's why they hated him more. That's what that means. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. They were mocking him. This was a big joke to him. Come now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dream. And Reuben was the oldest, he heard it. And he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. He didn't want to kill him. And Reuben said unto him, shed no blood, but cast him into the pit, that is, in the wilderness, and lay no hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands, deliver him to his father again. So what did Reuben want to do?
Save his little brother.
Just put kind of a scare into him, knock him down. But he wasn't into this killing stuff, was he? The rest of them were. How about Judah? Yeah, Judah's right in on the plot. And what can you tell me about Judah?
He's the lineage of Christ.
That's right. I mean, you try to put this, you think it ought to be Joseph. He's a good guy. And it came to pass, when Joseph was coming to his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat. They couldn't wait. Can you just see that picture? Man, they couldn't wait to get the whole of that coat and rip it off him. They hated it. They just hated that symbolism. And then they cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty. There was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company. I read something. Let me find if I can. I'm sorry. Turn to Psalms 34. It may be there. I'm shooting in the dark again, which is not unusual. Well, that's not it. But somewhere, Joseph pleaded with him. It's further on. We'll read it further on. I read it. He pleaded to them, don't do this thing to me. He pleaded with them. And can you imagine, the reason I brought that up there, here he, Genesis 42. Just come to me. Genesis 42:21. And I think this is important here. And they said one to another, we are verily guilty concerning our brethren, that we saw anguish in his face. Now, as they were doing this, throwing him in the pit and threatening to kill him, ripping his coat off, they saw anguish in his face. He was scared when he besought us and we could not hear. Therefore, this is distress come upon us. Then it talked about Reuben a little bit. But here they're sitting down to eat, having a nice lunch, while their brother was in anguish. Now, that word anguish isn't just a little bit of sorrow. You know, that goes into your heart. I mean, that to me, that's a deep emotion. And people will recognize, any of us in here, when we're in that state, that you people recognize that you're in an anguish state. So they took him and cast him into the pit, and they sat down to eat bread. And they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites from Gilead with their camels bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. So here's Joseph, hadn't done anything wrong, at least not in his mind, he hadn't. And Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we just slay our brother and conceal his blood? Wanted the cabbage, didn't he? Wanted the money. Come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. Or did he maybe not just want to kill him? I mean, you know, I give Judah the benefit of the doubt here. But it says, what profit? But maybe he had a little bit of a conscience at that time. And let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother and our flesh. So that tells me that he had a little bit of a conscience. Not a real full one yet, but something there. And his brethren were content, you know, basically, okay, let's split the money up. Then there passed by many knights, merchantmen, and they drew and lifted up Joseph out of the pit and sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. And they brought Joseph to this place of Egypt. Is Egypt a good place? No, not for a godly person. It just was not. And Reuben returned into the pit. Behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. Reuben was upset about it, very upset about it. When you rent your clothes, in the tradition of the Old Testament, the Hebrew custom, what would that mean?
Sorrow or distress.
Oh, grief. Yeah, just distress. You know, that's what it was. And he returned unto his brethren and said, the child is not... And I wither, shall I go? I mean, he was just in a tizzy. You know, he didn't even know what to do. And that's what that said. And they took Joseph's coat and killed a goat of the goats and dripped the coat in blood. And they set the coat of many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, what scoundrels. I mean, what a... A bunch of scoundrels to do something this rotten. It's pretty rotten. I mean, that's what I see here. They were just wicked brothers. It was more than just jealousy. They were wicked before the jealousy come up. And that's one thing I want you to get out of this story. They didn't all of a sudden become wicked because of that dream. They didn't like it. They were wicked before. So they put blood on the coat, and they said the coat, and they sent the coat with many colors, and they brought it to their father and said, this have we found, know now whether it be thy son's coat or not. I mean, what an idiotic thing. You know, they knew Jacob.
It's the only one like it.
Yeah,
it
Jacob
was a designer.
Was going to know whose coat it was. So Jacob rent his clothes and put sackcloth upon his loins and mourned for his sons many days. What does that mean, many days, in this account of Jacob? Not what?
A long time.
A long time. It didn't go away.
And it seems even more compounded because they're watching their father mourn for his son when they know what happened to him, and they were causing the mourning for Jacob.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I say. They talk about scoundrels to make somebody suffer the way they did, and they're counting the money in their pockets. You know, it's pretty rotten. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. Now, you think there was a lot of comfort going on here? You think his brothers were really comforting him? I don't think so. They may have done a good shuck and jive, a little fake out deal, but these are wicked brothers. These are wicked brethren, is what they were.
This lets us know something, and the only place it tells us that he had more than one daughter then.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, but as we know, daughters didn't count a whole lot. Dinah did, but. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him. He refused to be comforted. What does that mean? Refused to be comforted. He was just mad?
No, he was so distraught that he couldn't.
Yeah. Sometimes you get so distraught, the word refuse there should be just can't. Just could not be comforted. That's how that should be translated. And it probably is somewhere, but that is what it means. That he just could not be comforted. You know, I used to work in an ambulance in Hillsborough County, Tampa, Florida, fire department when Don was in school. We'd pick these people up that I picked up children that got killed or died or run over in an accident. And you couldn't comfort mom and dad. I mean, there was just nothing you could do. I mean, they were just out of their mind. We had to spend more attention to them. Because they were just so distraught. I mean, they were completely out of their minds, so to speak. So I understand this could not be comforted, even though I've never walked in those shoes. But I've seen other people, especially a Cuban. A lot of Cubans in Florida, they would almost go wild. I mean, I've seen them hit walls and just damage them, hurt themselves. I mean, they just totally would lose their mind when something like that would happen. So I understand this. You lose his favorite son, his youngest one. And I think there's something to be said about the youngest one. I remember when Chris left the nest. He's our youngest. It kind of, you know, when Brian left, it was hard. But when Chris, the last one, you know, I can't imagine if something would have happened. You know that, Donna?
Well, he had a younger son, brother, Benjamin. So Joseph wasn't quite the youngest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I keep saying that. Yeah, that's right. He was 17, so I keep thinking that's got to be the youngest. But you're right, Donna. Thank you.
But he was different. He kindly grudged Benjamin because he cost the life of the love of his life.
Yeah.
But along with that, man, I hate to bring it up, a dear friend of ours lost her son at 16. One of J.R.'s best friends. They buried him where the end of Glen Lily Road and Burn River Road came and turned. For years after that, there's many mornings when I go to work, she would be sitting there by the graveside.
Oh, it's
that's how you can mourn over a child.
It would have to be devastating. I mean, I can't imagine that having to walk in those shoes. You know, none of us want that. I mean, it's but it happens. Part of life is dying. Gary?
Well, there's, you know, it's really hard for people to be of comfort at that time. And since they're so nervous and they want to say something that's going to be comforting because they love you, things just pop out. Well, you got seven other sons, you know. Or,
yeah, try that.
And I mean, but that happens and people don't mean it, but they're... Because they're so caring, they can never imagine that happening to them. They want to show you how much they love you by saying something.
I know.
And sometimes it just, but you're not hearing any of that.
No, no.
You know, so it's a very difficult thing.
So all his sons and daughters arose to comfort him and refused to be comforted. Two more verses. For I will go down to the grave. He will go down to the grave mourning his son. You guys can read the last verse. Thank you for your time.
They try to keep you like in an area.
That's good.
So far, I'm familiar. Far west of that is Tulsa, far north.
But people kept coming in and not that.
I made those little bags. Just to set up home. Well, I thought
you were going to go there.
I didn't have enough for everybody. Well, I only had 15 bucks.
That's the thing I look at. If I'm a trucker, I'd like to be in the more open areas.
I'm not going to worry about it.
Right in the city somewhere.
Someone don't care.
All a mess.
But anyway.
It is right. It hasn't been too bad.
People are just
stupid on the road.
And they're just getting ridiculous.
Yeah, and we got the little radar system on. Most trucks are almost driving themselves now. They're governed, they're automatic. You put it on a cruise, and if it sees a car in front of you and you're coming up on it, it'll automatically slow you down to match it. So if it's doing 60, you're not
standing. They're going to run up on them.
No, it'll slow down. It's so gradual, like you won't know it. I'll look down, I'm doing 60. I got my cruise set for 65. Reverse problem is that the car has in front of you. It'll set the brakes on. So you will like that. You jerk like that. So yeah.
If you're not ready for it,
I don't put it on first. And then